Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. CraftBeer.com presents live from the 2010 Great American Beer Festival, CraftBeer.com Beer and Food Pairing 101. Featuring Julia Hertz, Craft Beer Program Director of the Brewers Association, and Fred Biltman, Beer Evangelist and Partner of New Holland Brewing Company in Holland, Michigan. Good evening, everyone. I'm Carolyn Smigalski, the Beer Fox, the editor and writer at Beer and Brewing, at Bella Online, the voice of women on the internet. I'm here on behalf of the Brewers Association, which is the craft trade association for craft brewers nationwide. Brewers Association also presents craftbeer.com, the World Beer Cup, and Savor, an American craft beer and food experience in Washington, D.C. This is the 29th annual Great American Beer Festival, and there are 2,200 beers out there on that floor for you to taste. So make sure you get started. Podcasts of these presentations will be available at craftbeer.com. So if you want to check it later, you could do that. Our first guest has so much energy, she makes the Tasmanian devil seem like he is standing still. She's a certified Cicerone, the world's beer equivalent to a sommelier, a recognized beer judge of the Beer Judge Certification Program, and an award-winning home brewer. She's been featured by the Food Network and has been interviewed on CNBC Squawk Box, on NPR, Fox News, and a number of other mainstream media outlets. And she is passionate about what she does. As Craft Beer Program Director of the Brewers Association, she is a powerful voice in the name of craft beer and is the brainchild behind Craft Beer Muses and other great stuff at craftbeer.com. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Julia Hertz. Paired up with Julia this evening is another powerful beer evangelist in the craft beer world. He joined New Holland Brewing Company as a partner in 2004 and has grown New Holland to become one of the most exciting names in both the brewing and the distilling world. The High Gravity Series, Cellar Series, freshly rotating seasonals, library beers, and specialties from the vault explode with flavors that go beyond anything mere mortals might drink. From the legendary Eighth Mole of El Molocho to the sacrilegious Dragon's Milk aged in oak barrels, and onward to the 10 hop strikes of existential ale, I am proud to present to you from New Holland Brewing Company, Fred Biltman.
Thank you.
Wow, Carolyn, thank you for that amazingly generous introduction. It's great to be up here, you guys. How y'all feeling tonight? Let's tell everybody out there that they should be in here. Come on, bring it. That's what I'm talking about, people. We're here for Beer and Food Pairing 101. All right, how we're going to roll with this, because we got two ingredients, three beers, two pairings, 30 minutes. You think we can pull it off? I think so. We've got Johnson & Wales serving for us. We want to thank them for their help. And what you guys each have is a beer that's being served, but don't try it yet. I know you're thirsty. What we want to do is set the tone, and we put some little cheat sheets because it's a lot to remember on Beer and Food Pairing 101. But basically, we wanted to feature malt specifically. And when you're talking about pairing beer and food, if you don't know what the ingredient that goes into beer is all about and flavor profile of that ingredient, it's not as easy to pair with the food. So I really wanted to share with you guys one of the malts that's in one of New Holland's great beers, and that's the beer in your glass, the Sundog Amber. So everybody take their little baggies out, and let's talk about some malt. There's some caramel malt in here. You're going to take it, put it in your hand, and dump it out. Don't worry about getting things messy. Don't worry. Just put it in your hand. And what we want to taste is this is a medium malt in that it's not fully roasted to dark, roasty characters. It's also not a Pilsner malt where it's a little bit more mellow. Pilsner malt's known for maybe honey notes and the like. Caramel malts are a beautiful thing, and it's actually got a little kernel inside with crystallized sugars, and that's the result of a malting process that crystallizes those sugars and gives you that essence that you're going to get in the Sundog Amber Ale. You guys chewing on that? Now, malt, the reason malt is so amazing when you pair with food is that it helps soothe the heat in beer. Anybody ever have spicy food? Put a real malty beer, like a Bock beer or something against it. It'll calm down that heat. It's a beautiful thing. It also helps you link in with other flavors, right? One of the principles of beer and food pairing is to get a complement of flavors going on between the beverage, the beer, and the food. And so what we're looking for and what Fred's going to pair this amber ale with is actually that complement. And there might even be a little bit of contrast in there in the cheese that we've got going on. So let's hear a little bit from Fred. We've got the beers in your glasses. He's going to introduce this cheese and talk about this pairing.
All right. Thank you, Julia. So I want to expand on what Julia said a little bit about the caramelization and the caramel malt flavors that are found in a beer style that features malt forward as its primary aspect. And so it's one of the most available bridges to food from a complementary point of view, because how many foods are caramelizing things, caramelizing sugars? You look at baked breads, you look at roasted poultry, you look at grilled meats, caramelized sugars in desserts, caramelized onions. All these things are featuring that caramelized character, and so having it in a beer makes a very harmonious bridge. So with this cheese, which is from Evergreen Lane Farm in Fenville, Michigan, this is actually a beer-washed, semi-hard cow's milk cheese. And the cheese that you're starting with is this wedge that has the brown rind from the poet. So it's the thin slice. Everybody with me? So this cheese, I find, has a nice creaminess, but it also has a nuttiness. And when you look at the flavor profiles or the flavor bridges that are available in malt-forward styles, besides just that caramel malt, I find nuttiness to be another bridge of often available. And so with Sundog Amber Ale specifically, I find a sweet caramel malt in the front end, and I find the finish to be slightly nutty, which helps dry it out and keep it from being a cloying sweetness. So that nuttiness is one of the things I'm bridging to this cheese. It's actually washed in Poet, which is our oatmeal stout. So she's washing it in our beer, but not this beer. But when I first started tasting the cheese, I tried it with the Poet, because that would make sense to pair it with the same beer it was washed in. But it was actually a bigger beer and roastier and kind of ran over some of the nuttiness, where I found Sundog really pulled it out. So you might... Another thing I want to talk about real briefly as we talk about this first pairing is why pair? Like, what are we talking about here? And the reality is you can eat something good and you can drink something good, but if they're not interacting to enhance the experience together, it's not really pairing. You're just eating and drinking well, which there's nothing wrong with, I might add. But what we're trying to talk about here is thoughtfully selecting a beverage or thoughtfully selecting a food to match the other that's going to change the experience for the better.
What I like to say is you take two parts, and they both, if they come together properly when you're pairing, the whole and the sum of those parts are better because those two parts work together.
And so that nuttiness is probably the first bridge that we're talking about. And the creaminess of the cheese, I think, is going to bring that sweet roundness of the beer forward, too. So for the most part, we're talking about harmonious, complementary flavors between those aspects. What do we think? Do you guys like the pairing? Are you finding this makes sense? Thumbs up. It's a really nice cheese and a small creamery in our small town that I'm really proud of. She specializes in goat's milk cheese, but when the goats aren't making milk fast enough, she specializes in cow's milk cheese.
What I'm getting, too, is even though it's an amber ale, which is not known for being an overly aggressively hopped beer or bitter beer, I'm getting some of the hops in there, and they're helping cut through the fat in that cheese. And that's one aspect that hops actually bring to the table when you're pairing. And the big picture is wine does an amazing job of a contrast against what it's paired with, but beer both complements and contrasts. And one of the elements in beer that wine doesn't have going for it are hops. So let's talk about your hops. There's a whole hop.
Julia, can we back up for one second?
Go ahead.
I think another thing that we want to talk about in terms of the basic principles of pairing, a good rule to follow, which seems basic, but if you start to learn how to incorporate it into your selections will help you a lot, is matching intensities. So I talked about it a little bit before, but think about matching intensity as kind of a guiding principle to all your pairings. So the bigger and dynamic a food is, you're most likely you're going to want to match that with a bigger and more dynamic beer. And the same goes for being subtle. If you have a food or beer that has subtleties layered underneath, then you need to bring a similarly subtle counterpart so that you're able to keep all those things in play. And I think that this pairing is an element of that. It's a fairly medium-bodied cheese, and we have a fairly medium-bodied beer. So both, all their flavor wheels are going to stay intact and available to your palate.
Yeah, great addition. So going to your hop, this is a centennial whole hop flower. What's so cool about this is normally how hops are shipped is I've been to the fields during harvest, and once they get the actual flowers, they will pack them together in 200-pound bales, and that's how they're shipped. That's why a lot of the time you really only see crushed hop leaf. These are actually shipped to us as the whole hop flower. And what I want you guys to do is split it open. You're going to split it open. There's some extra hops in the back if anybody needs more. But what happens when you split it open is you're going to see some orange. Almost looks like pollen in there. That's where all your bitterness and flavor is coming from hops. And also aroma. Those are the alpha acids and the lupulin glands. Give a whiff to that hop and see what you get in your nose. That is like the best fresh hopped beer that you'll get straight from the source. It's a beautiful smell. And what's real fun about featuring this centennial is that we talked, when talking to Fred and choosing the beer, we wanted to choose one of his beers that really was featuring, was very hop centric. And that's indicative of what the Mad Hatter IPA is all about. Now, hops are amazing in that they do many things, but the one thing that they do is they balance the sweetness of malt. That's a beautiful thing, and they also help cut through fat. So hops bring a lot to the table. Now we're going to go ahead and move to the Mad Hatter and hear what Fred has to say about how he's pairing it with this next cheese.
So hops are a really fun flavor to play with. And when I talk about beer flavors to a wide audience that has different various levels of experience, it's important to sometimes break away from just beer semantics and beer words. Because if you think about it, if somebody didn't grow up with beer, and you say, well, this is hoppy, what are we telling them? They don't know what hoppy is. And so when you start talking to people about beer and you're bringing people in and you're wanting to describe a beer, sometimes you need to break away from styles and break away from just simple ingredient adjectives and talk about what is hoppy. And so a hoppy beer to me has a lot of available flavors that are going to be different than other beers. Citrus, grapefruit, evergreen, kind of pininess. These are flavors that can come from the hops. Acidity is not necessarily a flavor, but a characteristic. So these are things that are going to be more prominent in a beer that's featuring its hops. And then the actual flavors of different hops is something that you can get into as your palate develops and you can start to recognize those. So something to do with Mad Hatter is I want you to swirl the glass around and put your nose in the glass and really smell that aroma. IPAs are dry hopped for the most part, and so dry hopping is contributing that aroma. And that aroma is going to really give you that fresh hop character, that grassy, floral, aromatic sense that this is a resinous flower from a vine is the ingredient that we're using. And then as you get into the body of the beer, you're going to see that flavor represented in different ways. It brings bitterness, it brings citrus, it brings grapefruit. And then we balance those flavors with the sweetness and roundness of malt. If it were all hops all the time, it would be somewhat out of balance and maybe harsh on our palate. So we're going to talk then about what the flavors that hops brought to the table, how are we going to bridge those to food? And so all the things I just talked about, we didn't talk about technical style terms or technical brewing terms. We talked about things your palate already understands. So what else do you like to pair with aromatic, kind of herbaceous, maybe citrus things? And if you guide yourself that way, it'll be a good path. So I like to pair IPAs with aromatic or bitter greens sometimes. I also like them with spicy dishes because they'll stand up and kind of survive in there.
But wait a minute, Fred. I thought hops can intensify heat, too. So
well,
how do you deal with that?
I think that's a lively debate that one could have in longer than a half hour. And I do think that they can do both. I do think the acidity of hops acts as a cleansing agent against spicy foods. But I think maybe more importantly, Julia, and this might be the contrast of sometimes people are saying the same thing in different ways, is that hops in a hoppy beer its flavor will remain on your palate longer. So as that spice is taking over your palate, the beer is not going to run away both flavors will stay in the game longer. And so that's part of the cleansing act, even if it does intensify the heat. So in this case, we don't have spicy food for you, but what I do have is a nice cheddar. And this is a sharp cheddar from Lakeside, Michigan. Both of these cheeses are from Michigan. I was happy to kind of explore and watch our cheese industry grow. So I thought it was important to bring a little slice of Michigan here for you.
Can I interject and ask your favorite way to taste when you're pairing? Do you like to taste the beer first, then go to the food, and then back to the beer, or the opposite?
I think typically I do the food first and then the beer, but I don't think it's I think it's a rule that shouldn't be a rule. I think you can go either direction.
Right.
Usually, for me, I think it's that I'm usually building the beer experience around the food. So I get the sense of the food in my mouth, I let my palate adjust to that, and then I see how the beer complements it. But there are other times when I have a beer that strikes me as, oh, this would go great with something. I mean, I've been known to, you know, leave the table and go to the kitchen and come back with, this beer reminded me of this, I wanted to have it, here we are. So beer can inspire food and the food can come second too.
Right, and what you bring up is great. It's all about experimentation. Your palate knows what you're tasting best. And you know it when you've got that home run pairing. But if you're not dialed in with something you're tasting, go to the fridge or go back to the bar and get a draft of something different and work your way through that experimentation until you dial in what style is really working best with what you're trying. It's not always the first try that you nail it.
Julia, I'm only slightly disappointed that you were the first one to advise them to go back to the bar.
Sorry, Ben.
I wholeheartedly endorse that sentiment, though. I just want to let you know I'm on board. So cheddar cheese is one of these, especially aged cheddar, and I believe this is 12-month aged. It can have some saltiness to it. It can have some sweetness to it. It has those lactic acid crystals inside that'll be slightly almost, you know, they kind of enliven on your palate. And so I find that they need a little bit of a beer of substance so that it's going to follow that matching intensity rule. And I also think the acidity of an IPA is nice against the sharpness of the cheddar. It's going to help whisk some of those big flavors off your palate. And then I also think, you know, there's almost an herbal sense of an IPA. And I think that makes sense to bring in to complement, even though it's a, I would say more of a contrasting pair as far as its core, but there's also complements inside it. So one of the things is I think there is a certain creaminess to all cheese, but inside cheddar, even though it's featuring other flavors, that's going to bring the sweetness of an IPA forward. That malt character that sometimes is second position to the hop flavors, that malt character is pleasing and enjoyable. And maybe counterintuitively, I find cheeses like this will bring that forward, and the beer you'll start to get a bigger sense of the malt character of an IPA. And the IPA actually won't seem very hoppy when you have a well-tuned pair. So alone, that might, you know, for some people who either don't drink IPAs or let's say you have a big IPA, you have an Imperial IPA, well paired, that can be really light on its feet. And somebody who doesn't think they like hops may really enjoy that beer when it's with a food that's interacting in a way that brings their intensities together and is harmonious either in a contrasting or complementary way. All of a sudden that beer can seem just like a session beer. And so context is everything here. And I find that aged cheddars and IPAs, especially medium-bodied IPAs, which Mad Hatter really is, it's not the hoppiest, it's not but it's forward. I find it to be very pleasant.
Yeah, awesome. And I definitely find this is more of a contrast choice, because normally for IPAs I would choose like a more pungent blue cheese or something like that. That's also somewhat contrasting, but this is a different variation on it. And it's back to the 101 that we want to deliver in these 30 minutes. Contrast, complement, and cut through that fat. So the sum of the parts become better as a whole. That's your beer 101 in a little nutshell right there.
And I think another hint or tip for pairing in general is that in instructional settings like this, we pair to each thing on the plate. And if you go to a beer dinner, you're going to pair to each course. And that's extravagant, lovely, I enjoy it, but it's not necessarily how we eat on a Tuesday evening. And so I try to remind people that the same way I would pair to an individual course or a dish in a dinner is the same way I pair to a plate. Because if the plate is designed harmoniously, you know, you have your mashed potatoes and your steak, and that may not be the best pairing example, but you have things that go together. Like your palate understands these three things make a nice dinner. They're already composed. So all you have to do is identify which flavor bridge on that plate you want to throw a line to. And then whatever that bridge is the door to the rest of the plate. So it kind of gets you in. So you don't have to think, oh, there's so many flavors, what am I going to do? So instructional things where we're pairing to single flavors, which is why cheese and chocolate make sense, is great. But then remember to bridge this into Tuesday night. And I'm having something for dinner. Think about which flavor you want to enhance, and then thoughtfully select a beer. That's what pairing is all about, is remembering that you have choice and you can enhance your experience.
Right, and what Fred's saying in laywoman's terms, gotta give you a hard time, is you pair to the preparation and the flavors in whatever you're gonna eat, not the protein. When I hear white wine and chicken, that's like such BS. You don't pair wine to chicken like that. You're thinking about what ingredients were used, what's the sauce, what are the flavors melding on there, and then that's what you bring in with your beer. So already in this world, beer world, we're schooling the wine folks beyond what they ever anticipated. So before we go to the next beer, I just want to make sure everybody outside knows that this is the place to be in here. 1, 2, 3. Well done. All right, and then we're going to work our way to the Beehive Triple, which is an incredible gem, I think, that Fred is generously sharing with us. That's just getting poured. And the third element, we presented malt, right? Got you familiar very quickly with flavors on that. Talked about hops. Now we're talking about flavor profile from yeast in the beer. And that's going to carry over to the flavors of the beer that carry over to what's also going to happen when you pair. And yeast can have influence over 500 different identifiable flavors in beers. It's an incredible living organism that's used in bread, that exists in the air right now, wild fermentation, right? Or controlled fermentation, where you're specifically picking a strain, and maybe Fred can talk about what strain was used for the Beehive, and then we can dovetail into what's going on with the pairing.
So, you know, I find talking about flavor profiles in this way incredibly eye-opening. It was for me when I shifted from starting with styles first. And I think from the cellar is one of the ways that I talk about this category. And I find it useful because some beers can play in either flavor profile. And you're kind of deciding which characteristic of that beer you're going to bridge to. It's going to determine where it's at. But yeast brings fruitiness. It can bring spiciness. Beers can be brewed to accentuate that yeast flavor profile, or they can be brewed to dampen it or mute it. In this case, we're really showcasing the flavor profile of a Belgian triple yeast, which is going to bring a little bit of banana, a little bit of clove, and then we've gone further in adding ingredient enhancements to it. Besides just playing up that yeast profile, we've added things that are harmonious with that yeast profile in the beer, which in this case is honey and ginger. And so I think the primary flavor contributor there between those two is honey. But if you did a lot of straight honey, it would start to become a very sweet beer. So I feel the ginger is actually in a second position flavor-wise, but functionally is helping dry out that finish. That snap of ginger is helping whisking the honey down and make it a beer that's going to come off your palate in the finish.
You're talking a lot. I want to try this pairing.
Let's drink and eat. So,
I mean, yeah.
My friend Gail Ambrosius is a chocolatier in Madison, Wisconsin, and she is delightful at what she does. She has made this lemongrass and ginger truffle. So it's a chocolate truffle with lemongrass and ginger in the Grenache, and we've paired that with this triple. And in this case, it should be fairly elementary to get my understanding. You know, the logic behind the pairing is looking at ginger as one of the bridges. And again, it's kind of opening that door. So the ginger is what they have in common. And then I don't have to think through all of the pairings of lemongrass and chocolate and is that going to work with triple. I kind of let the bridge do the work.
Oh, my God. Chocolate is in the house. This is a damn good pairing. I hadn't gotten to try it before now. And this is an exact example of pairing strength with strength on equals. Neither one barrels over the other. They both work so well together. My stomach is just literally warming from this triple, too, as it goes down the gullet. Very nice. Very nice.
Thank you. So, and what I like about this pairing is it may seem counterintuitive to everybody that's outside of this room anyways, is that chocolate is a great, well, one, people don't give beer enough credit for dessert. Secondly, they don't give it enough credit for chocolate. And when you look at flavor bridges available in beer, we've already talked about a lot of them. Roast, coffee, chocolate, caramel, nuts, fruit. And here we've added honey. Are those things that might be listed in dessert makers' recipe list and candy makers' stuff? I mean, these are harmonious things our palate already understands. But someone might not think of a golden beer going with a dark chocolate. But when you think about bridges and you identify things, especially in a truffle where they're able to enhance the chocolate, it all makes sense. And so think thoughtfully. Don't rule anything out. Don't think all chocolates go with all dark beers, porters, and stouts that are presenting chocolate in their profiles. You can bridge to things besides the chocolate. And you can bridge to the chocolate.
Yep, bridging's a great term. Today we paired a Saison from Twisted Pine with a lemon ginger lavender sorbet. And it was one of the best pairings I think I've ever had because of the bridges that Fred's talking about. They're two are totally different flavor profiles of things that your mouth would taste, but they had bridges almost like a fresh spring day, and you could like taste the outside and the funkiness of the Saison, and it bridged and worked so well with the ginger and the lavender. Just delightful. Great example.
You've had other people's pairings today?
I've been drinking all day, Fred.
Wow.
And tasting all, Fred. It's all day about tasting and appreciation. I had Foothill Sexual Chocolate today, and my tongue's still a little numb.
Wow.
Good. All right. All right, so we've pretty much done the bare minimum. This is a journey, people. Beer is definitely a journey and exploration, and when you put food into the mix, it can make the world such a nice place. I want to encourage you to use the resources, the sheet that I printed out for you. Even if you lose it tonight, that's on craftbeer.com. We have a whole pairing tips section for you, and it goes over these principles. But I respect wholeheartedly that you took time out of your festival today to sit and talk about this topic and taste with us. And we thank you very, very much.
Thank you very much. And I want to leave you with one more rally cry before you go. Remember that pairing is about thoughtful selection. So you saw today, we didn't cook anything. I'm a cook. Julie is a cook. We all like, a lot of people like to cook, but you don't have to be one to pair well. All you have to do is slow down, think, and make a thoughtful selection. Cheers. Great job.
Let's give a huge thank you to Julia Hertz from the Craft Beer Program, Director of Brewers Association, Fred Biltman of New Holland Brewing Company. The students are assistants from the Culinary Arts Program at Johnson & Wales, our AV artists, and you, ladies and gentlemen, have a great night.